Kevin McCullough says she is the most needed editorial voice in print today. Listeners have voted her fan favorite for 4 years running. The amazing mind of Carol Markowitz, exclusively on Kevin McCullough Radio.
Huge Tuesday, still trying to work through everything that we've got on tap for you, and there's a lot to still get to. Ari Zolden will be with us, so we're going to talk technology before we're done as well. But we just wrapped up that discussion with Mark Hemingway, and I got to say, there is something to this thought that I put out there about these women, this band of three, kind of being three strands of the same rope. They are tightly sticking together. They're talking impeachment when Pelosi's trying to say no. They're talking socialism when Joe Biden's trying to say no. They're talking anti-Semitism when the Democratic Party and some of the people that have been around a long time and understand the Jewish community are saying this is not a good move for us. They're unfazed by it. Get my next guest's perspective on this. Carol Markowitz is as the liner just said, a vital voice in America. She is a columnist for The New York Post. She's also written for a ton, about 180 million other places as well. But The Post is where she hangs her shingle. And Carol, it's good to have you back. Rahm Emanuel, the latest voice today, saying earlier today, 2020 is going to be a washout if we don't rein this in.
Right. And he had a good piece in The Atlantic a few days ago about the Omar comments, where he said that he's been accused of dual loyalty in the past and how, insidious and awful that is. It's funny. Rahm Emanuel is the voice of reason. Who saw that coming, right?
The man who said never let the chance to exploit a crisis go to waste.
You know, it's funny because, and no, it's not funny, but the joke keeps being all the Democrats have to do to beat Trump is not be crazy, and they can't do it. Like, they just can't do it. Crazy just comes naturally. So it's an interesting time.
Well, let me ask you this, because I thought that maybe
all their worst impulses. Yeah,
I thought maybe she was crazy, but I'm asking people if you have any idea what she means in this statement. So yesterday, AOC, day before yesterday at the South by Southwest, everybody heard the comments that we played yesterday, but I dug deeper into her talk and this came out. She says people should be excited to lose their jobs because of two things: techno future and not all creativity should be bonded by a wage. Carol, you're pretty good with words. You've written a lot.
Right.
You know English pretty well, much better than me. And I was born in America. What is she saying?
what's amazing about this is when her Green New Deal first came out, they included a frequently asked questions with it. And one of the questions involved people who are unable or unwilling to work. And then, quote, Republicans pounced on this and they dialed it back and they said that was a mistake and that they never meant to say that, and how could you even think that they meant to say that? And here she is repeating that, and nobody is really calling her on it. It's a crazy mixed up world.
When I hear that creativity should not be bonded by a wage, that sounds an awful lot like making people work for free.
Well, I hear that I will be paying for that creativity. I will be paying for the creativity that could not support itself.
It's just, I don't know, techno-futurism, another AOC-ism that's going to be with us for a while to come. Okay, and we could spend half an hour on that. Your column today, or yesterday, addresses a very important issue, and Mr. Trump Jr. retweeted you, which is kind of cool.
That's right.
it's never bad to have the president's son retweeting, but what'd you write about and why?
There's this, when President Trump spoke to CPAC, he mentioned that he wants to sign an executive order where schools that don't promote or don't protect freedom of speech will lose federal funding. And there's a couple of parts to this. First of all, why are they getting federal funding in the first place? But okay, whatever. They're all getting federal funding. The second thing is that people reacted to this with, how do we do this? How will we be able to pinpoint schools that can't protect freedom of speech? What does this really mean? Liberal newspapers immediately went for this is too difficult to implement. Well, I gave an example in my column yesterday. There was an incident at Portland State University where the college Republicans invited a very mild-mannered speaker, and he was not allowed to give his speech because of an Antifa member with a bell who just rang the bell the whole time and then at one point got up and danced in front of his PowerPoint presentation, and he literally could not give his speech as campus police looked on. So the school knows this is happening. They're incapable of protecting freedom of speech. That is the exact type of example where they should lose federal funding. If you're confused about what that means, look at that video by Andy Ngo. It's spelled N-G-O. He's a really amazing journalist who's covering the insanity that's going on in Portland, and it's really bad. And so check out his videos. That is what we're trying to protect against. And I think that's entirely sane to say no funding for schools that can't protect the most basic freedom of speech.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that the same video where the guy then accused him after the dance was over of having done some stuff that the guy was like, I've never done that before. And he's
that's
like,
right.
Oh, well,
so
I just made it up.
Towards the end of the video, the Antifa guy is talking to the speaker, and he says, the last time you spoke on campus, quite a few trans people got beat up. And the speaker says, I've never spoken on campus before. And the Antifa guy shrugs his shoulders and says, I can make stuff up, too. And it's so noxious. It's so terrible because your life can get so easily destroyed now with just the whiff of an accusation. And that's exactly the kind of thing that this guy was trying to do.
Well, okay, so this is just plain ugly, and this is where the left is. This is where the Democratic Party is. This is where the Democratic Party refuses to not be, because they won't rein in the forces within their ranks that are pulling all this stuff. And I think that what's going to happen here, Carol, is that some blue areas are going to get bluer in 2020. In fact, they're going to go from medium blue to really dark navy. But I think that a lot of the pink and purple states are in play. And if we focus on jobs and economy and getting people higher wages and helping them be able to be freer and make better decisions for themselves, I think that we've actually got reason to think that we could have a really good election night in 2020.
You know, it goes back to that Rust Belt that you predicted would go Trump, and I totally didn't think so. I cannot see this current moment playing in the Rust Belt. I can't see Pennsylvania or any of those states responding to an AOC new party who dis with positivity.
Yeah, and no, I think you're right.
You know?
All right, so reader piece, Don Trump Jr. says reader piece. It's in the New York Post. Uh-huh. Carol, nice to have you. Thanks for being
Thank
here.
Thank you, Kevin.
Kevin McCullough, stay with us.